This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Welcome to the May Road Show, episode number 205. My name is John Morgan.
Cold coffee
is in the house. 205 is it?
Is that it?
That's it?
That's it.
Come on, man. That's strong. 205 consecutive weeks of mixed martial arts discussion coming at you. John Morgan, cold coffee at the spiritual birthplace of the MMA Road Show. Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs and Durango. It's a classic, classic spot. And for that, we brought a very, very special guest.
What up?
Canada's post-media. Wait, no.
What
Post-media
up?
Canada. It's Danny Austin. I don't know.
Both were wrong. I work for a company called Post-media. I'm Canadian. That's like what it comes down to.
Danny Austin. You know him. You love him. Friend of the Road Show, Danny Austin. It has been a long day, fellas. It has been a long one. We always sit down and do this on a Thursday night. It's a little later on a Thursday night than we might like to do it. But a busy day, man. A lot going on. We'll get into all of it. And just to kind of frame it up, basically we had UFC 235. Open workouts today, scrums as well. So the top six fighters were there. We got to do all that. This is on the heels of Media Day yesterday. And then the folks at ONE Championship, very wisely, I might add. I mean, this is smart, man. They put together a Media Day and it right here in Las Vegas. It was at Extreme Couture. And basically, not only did they just announce it, I mean, they aggressively marketed it to media and said, listen, if you're going to be here, come be here. And you know what, man? And I know nobody from the UFC will say this on record, but I even heard some people from them behind the scenes saying, hey, kudos to them. That was a smart play, man. I mean, you know there's media here. Why not do it?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to say that I thought it was perfect in execution necessarily, but they brought in Eddie. They brought in Demetrius Johnson. They brought in Vitor, who they announced had signed. And, like, that's enough. We're all going to go out for that.
Yep.
Like, you know, and, yeah, I mean – I thought it was great, and to be honest, I mean, I'm not someone who's going to write a lot about ONE Championship, but it's right there, so I go.
Yep.
And, you know, they're going to get some mentions in my copy over the next couple of days. Like, that's kind of all their point. It was worth it financially, whatever they spent.
I agree, man. It's
they
smart.
They spent some money. They brought a satellite truck just to stream that. Like, looking at the camera and the production on the inside was not the greatest. You know, like, you saw a lot of the back of your guys' heads
right.
for the stream or whatever, in the open workout or whatever. But they put some money out for this.
Still pretty impressive.
Money
the setup they
thing.
Built in Extreme yeah. Couture, I mean, that is not a big gym. And they came in yeah. there and decked it out. So, all right, we'll get to all that in a second.
Piping, draping, and everything.
I do want to say, yeah, I know, the first thing I noticed when I pulled up was the satellite truck. I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
So, I want to get to ONE Championship because, I you know, as you said, some things they could have improved on, but some things that were good. And I want to get to that because, in fact, I think we're going to spend more time talking about it than I originally anticipated talking about because – it did feel like a lot of those guys, you know, the leash was off, so to speak, and they were speaking their mind.
Once they got to the scrums.
Once they got to the scrums. Yeah, yeah. In front of it, it was a different story. But so I do want to talk about that. But I guess let's start with UFC 235 because it is a big, big card, no question about it. I will say our traffic as a whole isn't just crushing it. I mean, but it is a big card. I mean, first of all, it's a quality card top to bottom. I think maybe at the top it's suffering only because people aren't giving Anthony Smith a chance. And I guess that's understandable. I mean, John Jones, arguably the greatest of all time. Anthony Smith, the somewhat unheralded contender. If you're a hardcore fan, you've seen him. You've watched his rise. He's been around forever. Listeners of the MMA Roadshow will definitely know we've got a history with Anthony Smith. I mean, it's amazing
likeable
to see
guy.
This guy.
Likeable guy.
Likeable yes. guy. So, I think that's probably part of it. I guess – we got to get to the picograms, and we'll get to that in a second. But let's just talk about the matchup itself. Danny, I mean, you get to pick and choose a little bit of what you cover, when you cover, because obviously you're tied up with hockey coverage. You're tied up with Canadian football coverage. So it's not like you're on the road every single week. So you got to pick and choose a little bit. So this matchup, does it capture your attention? Is it what is it? Is it about the GOAT being back in action? Is it about this potential huge underdog story? Give me your take on it.
I mean, it's largely the GOAT being back in action. But, I mean, it's one of the things that I was really wrestling with because when I told people, oh, I'm coming to Vegas for this card, Jon Jones is fighting. I will be honest that a lot of my sort of casual MMA fans who are, you know, it's anecdotal. I don't know if it's the best barometer. But they admitted that they didn't know who Anthony Smith was.
Right.
And at first I was thinking like that was a negative. And then I looked at myself and I was like, what are we doing here? We're complaining that there's too many champion versus champion matchups. And then we have a legit guy who has earned his title shot. And maybe who cares if no one else knows about him?
Right.
This is the right fight to make at the right time. And I believe Anthony Smith is the guy who should be getting this title shot right now. And so, I mean, I'm thrilled to be here. I think it's a great matchup. Do I give him much of a chance? I mean, I give him as much of a chance as everyone's got a chance in a fight, and I do respect what he's done recently. But, I mean, having Jon Jones' name on it certainly helps. But in both this case and the welterweight fight, I believe that it's guys who have earned their shot, and maybe they're not huge names yet, but that may be the way I want MMA to work.
There's something to be said for that, man, because, you know, this super fight phenomenon that I guess Conor McGregor started, of course the big fights are big. You know, we were saying last week how amazing if we'd have finally been able to get GSP and Anderson Silva, how that would have been. But now, super fight, it's being thrown around too loosely. Guys are winning one fight, defending their title once, and they want to move up a division. And I get it, man. I understand. Who doesn't want that image of the belt on each shoulder?
It's a cool image.
It's a cool image, and I'm sure it gives you – I mean, it gives you options. You know, if there's a really good number one contender in one division and a not-so-good number one contender in the other division, take the not-so-good one, I would think.
The problem is when that's not what's happening,
right?
And I think that's where legitimately – I mean, like, if you look at bantamweight, and we all know – Marlon is the next.
Right.
It should be next.
Should be next.
And now we're sitting here being like, well, are we holding up that division? I mean, what's for a rematch between TJ? Like, that's where I think that it's frustrated people.
Yep.
So when we just have Jon Jones, who for all of the frustrations we've all had with him over the years, is just being like, no, I'll fight the next guy. It's probably not going to be the biggest payday based on points on pay-per-view that I've ever had, but I'm going to fight him because he deserves it. And from a sporting perspective, I'm going to do the right thing, which I do believe he had a choice. I mean,
of course.
And he did it. And I respect him for it. And I'm happy we have this card based on that.
I think you make it is a great point. This is the right fight to make, even if it's not the biggest fight to make. And that's rewarding. That's refreshing to see. They're making the fight that should be made. And I like the fact, first of all, Jon Jones, how great has he been this week? I mean, just night and day versus last
heckled
time around.
Heckled you today before we went to the open workouts.
Yeah, you're right.
You heard this, fuck Morgan, or fuck you, Morgan, and then said something else like Morgan.
That?
Like, and I assumed it was another journalist that had just left the, you know, the Wolfgang Pucks was heading towards a thing, and then we turned around and, of course, it's Jon Jones.
No, that's the light heavyweight champion of the world saying, F you, Jon Morgan. I was like, yeah.
But with a smile.
With a smile, and he's like, you know I'm kidding. Yeah, he's cracking jokes. Yeah. How about at media day yesterday when he stays late? I mean, everybody's gone. He's the last guy in there.
That's probably why he did it, too.
Doing one-on-ones, doing everything. That's not –
he's like, I'm gonna give an hour. I'm gonna give you an hour to go around and get as many. And I'm like, it was a decent crowd. I mean, and with that time, he literally – could have went and probably did go completely around it. So that was
I don't
great.
Even know. I'm not even talking about today at the
right.
Open Workouts.
No, oh,
you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Today with the fans, he took a picture with literally
everyone.
Fan that was here.
Yeah.
I'm talking about yesterday at the media day where there's no public there.
Right.
And he's staying late doing extra interviews. I mean, he doesn't usually do that stuff. He's busy. You know what I mean?
It was funny there. I remember even thinking yesterday there was a point where I went to go collect my camera. I was like, there wasn't, like, media there. There wasn't, like, a large one. He could have easily walked away and just been
absolutely.
Like, I'm done, you know. But he was like, who wants to come up? Who's left? You know, like, he was there for so long that actually everybody, got to him. And normally it's like, you know, damn, we didn't get the chance to get over to so-and-so because of the line. But, yeah, it's neat that he stuck around. But, yeah, it stuck out to me today when he was just like, I'm going to give an hour. He's like, I'm going to get around. So get your phones ready, whatever. Like, let's just do it, you know. It's frustrating because I want to see him work out. I want to see,
but
it's like,
but he doesn't work out.
He never works out.
He used to, but now it's just like, but it's like, we want to see how it looks.
I thought he might today because he's been in such a good mood. You know what I mean? I think he usually doesn't because I just think he's kind of over it.
Yeah.
But I thought he might because he's been in such an incredible mood.
I mean, I've never attended an open workout as a fan. I sort of assume that like it's 50-50, where 50% of why they do open workouts is for us to get B-roll for video, right?
Well, like, that's how we think about it. I know I'm always like, I'm like, why didn't they work out for me? But
the
UFC is like,
is it
a media
event or is it a fan event? Yeah. They do debate internally because they used to not do the scrums. You know, they would do and you know, the really big events, they don't do the scrums. I know you hate it.
Well, I don't hate it if it's on Thursday. I hate it if it's on Wednesday.
Right.
If it's on the first day of media, it's a waste of a day if it's the first day. But it was Thursday. We had media day on Wednesday. So I literally, like, I skipped scrums. I'll be honest with you. I didn't go in with Robbie Lawler because I had other work to do. I was at hockey this morning and then came here.
Busy day, man. Well, your day's been even longer than ours, man. I'm sitting here complaining about our day. All right, well.
I largely spent the one championship thing making jokes about the host of one championship.
Oh, we will definitely get to that. All right, so John Jones is in a phenomenal mood. It's great. Today in the scrum, he did say, you know, kind of talking about, as you said, fighting the right guy. He's like, I want to do this. You know, he's like, I fought a lot of people. You know, now I'm starting to get people that are younger than me. And he did say, you know, I don't think he's convinced on the idea of going to heavyweight. You know, he said, listen, I could go to heavyweight at some point, you know, but it's dangerous for me, man. Those guys are bigger than me. You know, if I'm going to get heavily paid for it, cool. But if not, let me take on this younger generation. He mentioned Corey Anderson. He mentioned Johnny Walker, which is the first time, you know, before he said he didn't know Johnny Walker. Now he mentioned Johnny Walker.
Did he mention Tiago?
He mentioned Tiago as well. Yep. He didn't mention Dominic Reyes. I was wondering if he'd throw that name in there because that's certainly one I think we all have on there.
Absolutely.
But it's cool to hear him saying, like, no, give me those guys. Like, yeah, maybe they're not the stars, but I want to, you know, I want to beat everybody. Yeah. I want to face everybody. So I like that.
And that's sort of my measure of what the greats have done in throughout UFC history. Is, I mean, Anderson got to the point where literally, like, the UFC couldn't find an opponent for him. Demetrius got to that point.
See,
GSP sort of got to it.
You said it right there with Demetrius. That's the only thing that I'm scared of is that if he does that, then does everybody start going, yeah, but the division sucks. It's like, you know, Demetrius, are you telling me the flyweight division is bad? Of course the flyweight division is not bad. You know, those are great fighters. But when you beat them all, now all of a sudden, you know, it wasn't that good of a division to begin. That's the only thing that scares me is that people are going to say.
I do think because John has the respect coming into this stretch where he can do that, like I think that would influence that perception a little bit. But I know what you're saying, obviously.
Right.
But, I mean, for me, like – Listen, I'm a loyal listener to the Roadshow myself.
Yes,
I know you talked about it. I mean, with Tiago, like, why I want to see him is the Anthony Johnson thing.
That's
I never
it.
Feel like we got it. I know that he's willing to take a shot and throw a way bigger shot right back at you.
Yep.
I mean, that's the fight that I want to see. And Anthony Smith is not quite at that level for me.
I agree. I heard somebody bring that up at some point where he's like, hey, Anthony, aren't you kind of like the Anthony Johnson fight that didn't happen? I'm like,
he's not quite.
He's not quite, man. I think Tiago Mejia dos Santos is the Anthony Johnson fight that we didn't get. So I'm anxious to see that. All right, let's talk about Anthony Smith real quick. I don't know how much time you had spent around him before this week. I'm imagining not a ton of it. But, I mean, you know.
Here and there.
Yeah. You know, listen, I've told the story a million times, but the thing that stuck with me from that first meeting I had with him when he was a regional fighter on a 4-fight losing streak with a losing career record, and he walked up to me and introduced himself and said, you know, I'm going to be fighting in the UFC. And the thing that stuck with me, because I didn't know anything about him, and I looked up his record after he walked away, I didn't want to do it while I was standing there and be rude, was the confidence that he carries with himself, man. The self-belief that he's well-spoken, he's, you know, but the confidence. You can sense real confidence, real self-belief versus a guy trying to hype himself up. And this dude carries real self-belief. And I don't know, man. I sense it when I'm around him.
Which is, I think it's part of what makes him a compelling interview because he knows what we're saying and isn't particularly mad at the media for writing him off and addresses us specifically. I mean, you never feel – I mean, I know Oscar was fully open. He was like, I'm picking John in this fight.
Right.
To Anthony Smith because Anthony was like, I wish the media would just – say, I am picking John Jones instead of everyone's picking. So Oscar was like, okay, I'm picking John Jones. Let's go. And they had a great interview and all that. I like that he seems like a real person. B, he has that confidence. And genuinely, I mean, there are certain cliches that when certain guys say it, you're like, okay, no, I believe you. And when he's like, look, if I focus too much on John Jones, I'm not going to fight my fight. And he was like, the only way I win this fight is if I fight my fight. And he was like, and I believe that my fight – can beat John Jones.
Bro, you're so right. I think of, like, the number of times I saw people fighting Chris Cyborg that would, like, well, it's just a woman in there. It's just, you know, I'm not fighting a cyborg. I'm fighting. And you're like, You are so just telling yourself that right now. Yeah. Like, and the minute she hits you, you're going to change your mind. But you're right. And it's funny. I was talking to Mark Montoya's coach, Factory X, head coach. Man, what a phenomenal dude that. He got an underrated crew there. That's, I think he's starting to get a lot more love, but a phenomenal coach. But he said the same thing. You know, he came and talked to me, and I said, you know, he mentioned the fact that, you know, that kind of that mantra that they can't fight, you know, John Jones. They just got to fight a body, you know, not the legend of John Jones. And I even said, well, listen, I mean, I'm picking John, of course, you know. And he said, he's like, how can you not pick John? I get it. You know what I mean? He's like, I get why you pick John Jones. I get why you pick George St. Pierre. I get why you pick Demetrius Johnson. These are the greatest, you know. And I get it. He's like, but, you know, we're not going to fade. And I believe that Anthony Smith is going to go in there and at least make a dogfight out of this.
And I do think, I mean, John said a couple times, he's like, and I don't know if it's true, so I'm just sort of paraphrasing here. But he said, like, Anthony Smith has more fights than anyone I've ever fought. He's like, this is the most experienced guy I've ever fought.
Right.
And I do think the fact that, like, Anthony Smith has been dragged through the mud. I mean, the Ozdemir fight, he got beat up.
Yeah.
But we know that he can fight through. And I'm not saying that's going to result in a win. But, like, there are reasons to say, like, Anthony Smith's not going to go in there and get embarrassed.
I agree.
And you know what? The guy, when he hits, it hurts. I mean, we know that. And you're right. I mean, they're being around him this week and the level of, like, I don't want to say nonchalantness. I don't know what the word is. But the fact that he genuinely, as you said, seems okay with what people are saying. He seems okay that he's the underdog. And he was like, this is still a huge moment for me. He's like, I don't care if people don't know who I am.
Yep.
Like, my face has never been on a poster looking over the Vegas Strip.
How cool
he's like,
is that?
People know who I am now. He's like, I'm doing something right.
That's this right.
And I think that's awesome. And it's whether it ends up being the Rocky story in the ring or what, I mean, I feel good for the guy. And, again, it's why there's a positivity around this card that I haven't felt in a pretty long time at a UFC.
I dig it. Yeah, it's not the tension. All right, I guess if there was any controversy, it's the picograms, right? The drug test came out. We got the results. I was able to get them just a few minutes before they came out. But Nevada State Athletic Commission, two of their tests came in. Picograms were there, 60 picograms or less, I think, in each of the two samples. Okay. I'll be honest. When I heard it, I it sucks, but it didn't cause me alarm. I mean, I guess it's kind of the expected result. Right?
I expected. I was not shocked at all. When I saw it, I was like, isn't that what they've been feeding us the whole time?
I guess that's it.
You. It would have been more thing if we didn't see it, and then post fight, there was something that popped up. Then I think people were like, okay, that's fishy. You know, why didn't it hit here? But I mean, if it came out like they said it would. What'd be interesting is how many times they've tested them. They said they only tested them twice. You only got two test results. So even though they said
from the Nevada State Athletic Commission, now VADA and USADA tests came back clear,
like nothing. So just
zero.
That's weird.
But here's the thing. So I'm now at the point where, because the first thing I asked you, it's very similar. I was at hockey. I saw
who
you.
Who does Nevada use?
And I walked up to you and I said straight up, I was like, "This is what they said was going to happen, right?" And I'm now at the point. I mean, at 2:32. We did the same podcast, and, you know, we talked about all the, you know, what-ifs and all that. But this is pretty consistent with what Nowitzki explained. You know, experts had told him we're going to happen and what this pulsing is. And what his explanation in the scrum was he was like, that was the absolute peak of John's training.
Right.
So his body may have
at
just been secreted.
Getting rid of any toxins it may have.
And I just – there's a part of me that I'm not going to be a conspiracy theorist. I kind of have to believe what people who know more than me are telling me.
See, that's what I want to hear because, listen, I don't think I'm a naive person, but I also think that probably sometimes I lean towards the good in people and believe in people maybe too much. Now, Cole Coffey is 100% conspiracy theorist. Like
not like Fiasco Jones.
No,
Fiasco
not quite Jones. Fiasco Jones level. But I think if you can put together connections of how things were worked – you will do so. You have a tendency to lean that way. Meanwhile, I take you, Danny, as somebody that I think that you go over things with a fine-tooth comb. You know, not that you're necessarily –
it's like you guys act like journalists.
Yeah,
and, you know.
You are a very qualified, real media member journalist. Like, I think, like, you go – you ask questions. You concern. You know what I mean? That you do those things.
Speaking about real journalists
real
rolling up.
Real journalists
in
here. The Mac Life. Yeah. The Mac Life is in the house. And Walker in the house. This crew's getting big over here. I love it. This is what I like to see. All right. So this is what I ask. Because I trust you as a journalist and I trust you as a conspiracy theorist, Cole Coffey.
I appreciate that.
Is this a dangerous attitude that we're now becoming accepting and okay with it.
So I have talked to, like, several, I mean, not doctors, but people who do research into health science. Not health science. I don't know what I'm talking about. But you know what I mean. Like,
right.
People in medical sciences. And when I got back from 232, and what they all said is they were like, the long-term metabolite thing is the point here. And they're like, if there are no medium or short-term metabolites, at some point, like, if for 2 years it's been the same long-term metabolite and it's this small, like, there's no evidence to suggest anything else. And it's so tough because we all want to be, like, you know, zero tolerance, this and that. But if this really is what it is, and it's why I asked today, I said, is this an across-the-board, like, double jeopardy situation where if you tested once, you cannot get punished for it again? And Nowitzki said, yes, every single thing. If you test positive once, you cannot be punished again for the same, for injecting the same substance at that moment. And if that is true, then I think we can take them at their word a little bit here. There's too many people involved, too many athletic commissions, there's too many different drug testing agencies, and they're all saying the same thing. I mean, like, even if your inclination is to believe that John Jones has cheated at one point in his career, which I don't know 100% where I stand on, but I lean a little towards that there's been something that's happened at some point.
There's no question whether he meant to or not. Something went in his body that shouldn't have been there.
Yes. But at this point, there's no evidence to suggest that it's anything new, and it goes back to that test in 2017, and he's been punished for it, and the rule of law in MMA determined that he has served his punishment. And this is just leftover stuff that appears once in a while. And I think that I think
Anthony Smith said it right. I mean, he said, listen, I talked to Bob Bennett. I've talked to everybody involved. Like, my belief is that, yes, he cheated at one point. Now, again, if you want to say purposeful or not, I mean, it's still cheating, right? If it's accident, I mean, I guess it's accident. No, it's still cheating. It's still in your body, right? He put something in there it shouldn't have been. I believe he's clean now. And I think it is what you point to.
He served the punishment for that.
There's no midterm. It's only the long-term metabolite. And that's the saving grace here, right? And,
Sounds like you guys have bought the golden snitches line, hook, line, and sinker.
All right, conspiracy theories.
Conspiracy says. No, I'm just kidding.
And that's the thing. If someone can give me a piece of evidence that legitimately suggests, like, not some Reddit thread from bodybuilders talking about, like, half-lives and all this that I don't know. If someone can legitimately present to me an argument why I shouldn't be believing this line of thinking and why, like, the UFC is, like, why would they rebook him 2 months later? If they, like, I don't see it. Like,
yeah. All right. End of the day, we're all picking John Jones.
Yes,
of course.
Yes,
you have to. I would love. I mean,
well, you don't have to. I think we've had a couple people even in stab. Did somebody? I think somebody picked it.
I think
Anthony.
We've seen one or two.
Maybe one or
the
two.
Picks come out in full. I tomorrow, mean, like, we see him on email.
It certainly makes a lovely story to go out there and pick the underdog and have it be right. But this is one of those situations where you're just chasing the glory or whatever. But it is a wonderful story, and I think part of it too is just his personality. You want good things for him because he's a nice guy.
Of course.
You know, it'd be a nice happy ending.
He's
to,
also the perfect
the
example
event.
Of why, like, there's this is something old Spencer Kaito and I talk about all the time, about how there's actually nothing wrong with being one of the top 10 people in your weight class in the world. And one of the top, and he probably right now is one of the top 4 to 5. Anthony Smith's accomplished amazing things. Yeah. I just
say about DC. Like, there's no shame losing to John Jones two times.
Right.
Like, it's fucking John Jones. Like, we got it. It's but okay. Look what else you did. Like, you're okay, bro. You're like,
he's taking care of his family. You know what I mean? I'm sure he got a nice contract for being in a title fight. But dude, I would love to see him win. What an amazing thing. I mean, who was it that brought it up? Was it Oscar the other day that said, if he wins, would this be the biggest upset in MMA history? And
I don't know if Oscar says good things like that.
I still think it's Sarah GSP.
I think it was somebody else.
I mean, Sarah GSP, to me, that's the quintessential example, right? Sarah, yeah. Especially because Sarah comes out there and just rocks him, you know what I mean, the way it goes down. But it is an interesting debate. I mean, I guess
it's
how
right
it goes, like, it's got to be up there. And I don't care what the betting lines say, because betting lines aren't pure, like, odds of winning.
No, it's what we know about each fighter, like, from following the sport closely.
Yeah. It's great. It would be up there, man. It'd be one of the biggest upsets of all time. All right, let's talk about the co-main event. Tyron Woodley versus Kamaru Usman. A great fight as well. You know, I think a lot of people wanted Colby Covington to be in this fight. I know I wanted Colby Covington to be in this fight. But I like Usman a lot too, man. I called some fights alongside of him at Titan, and I like the guy. You know, sometimes he gets into the trash talk, and it's not so great. But behind the scenes, man, he's a good dude. But Tyron Woodley, man, when you start analyzing his record and what he's accomplished and what he's done, I mean, the guy is phenomenal. I'm pretty intrigued by this fight, though. I thought the Colby Covington fight would have a lot more heat. Now, again, we're talking about the rightful number one contender, but even these guys both say Colby, love him or hate him, is next. Or maybe even should have been here.
I love that idea right there. I mean, I love the fact that they both realize that, hey, this fight got put together because of whatever, you know, whether it was Kamaru's last performance, you know, the way that Colby's been acting, they kind of was getting punished. But I love the idea that both of them are like, yes, Colby deserves the next shot, or Colby deserves this. You know, going back to, I know we're going to get into Tyron, but I thought Kamaru handled himself wonderfully during the open workout.
All right, let's just start there. The open workout. Yeah. Colby came in, he storms it. I didn't know that.
And this was right after Kamaru was doing his dancing. He was dancing up on stage. He looked so at
Michael
ease.
Jackson.
His corner was like, just take your time. Stay slow. Just enjoy this. Enjoy this. And he was. And then when Colby comes in and starts MAGA trumping whatever on his little megaphone. But I love it that it didn't even faze Kamaru at all. He just laughed and kind of pointed over and just chuckled and took it in.
And handled it well, the scrum, by the way. So I thought it was perfectly. A bomb over there. And then he said, and then there's a reason he's outside the ropes. I was like, dude, that's the. I don't know if you practiced that line or you just came up with that line.
He must have just nailed it.
Like, there's a reason you're outside the barriers with the fans right now, and I'm on stage, son.
Yeah, he's operating at a different level right now, which bodes very well for that fight. To see him come in looking like that.
So here we are talking about the entertainment area, and we'll get to this again later with ONE Championship as well. But the antics. I know, you know, we're talking about these crazy super fights and these and this and that. And I know we're all a little entertainment era out at this point. Like, mm-hmm. it's getting too much. So Colby Covington coming in and doing what he did today. I mean, A, that is the most Colby Covington thing ever to do. Where do you guys stand on that? Because I will say –
I wish you would have prepped it a little bit better.
I'm 50-50. Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I'm 50-50. Like,
the phrasing was a little off. He was just like, eh.
On the one
Where's
hand,
your energy at? Where's your energy at? Yeah. You better get your energy up.
But, I mean, can you blame a guy, especially in the situation he's in, for kind of being passed over or whatever? Like, it is good to come make your name relevant again and to make sure you stay in the headlines, right? Or was that just stupid?
So I unequivocally hate Colby Covington. I want to be like, and he like I liked the idea. Like, I don't think it was executed perfectly.
Right.
I also like. I mean, my thing with Colby is he crosses the line often when he's not at UFC sanctioned stuff.
Right.
But like showing up and then just like walking 200 feet away and doing a media scrum so that you don't actually interrupt what's going on and don't actually get in trouble.
Yeah.
Was like I kind of laughed at it. I like of all the things that Colby's done today was like pretty inoffensive. It was funny. It probably like Usman loved it. I enjoyed it. I had no problem with it. Everyone talks about how Colby's turned down these fights. I don't know if he has or hasn't. I do genuinely believe the UFC would have probably preferred to book Colby against Woodley at some point over this Usman fight. I mean, I don't think this fight has much heat from a larger, you know,
no, it doesn't.
Mainstream perspective.
It doesn't. I think inside, like, I think we're all excited because I think the skill level between these guys, I think it matches up very, very well.
I did Aaron from TSN's podcast at the end of 2017, and we all had to pick our welterweight champion, and three people picked Usman.
Really?
I
didn't.
That's nice. This was long overdue, I think, for Usman. I mean, I think going back to when he had that whole, like, had to make weight debacle, you know, you're going to be the challenger if something happens, and then nothing happens, and it was just like, wow, you just did that, and you didn't get the next title shot, you know. I feel like this was the makeup for that.
So true,
you know, it's
man.
Like you did that.
That's so true.
And then,
that's
to, and then to just go
situation.
Back, it was like the worst situation ever. So, like, I feel like this is righting that wrong that they did to
but
him.
But it's also, you know? You were the interim title holder, and you also didn't get the fight.
Well, and that's why true. I like that Woodley was pretty straight up, where he was like, after this fight, I fight Colby, and then I look at my options.
Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily respect. I think that's the fact that he, like, knows at this point. What choice do you have?
Yeah, and probably bigger fights at middleweight. And, well, we'll get to that in a second.
But I'm just saying in terms of taking the Colby fight next.
Yeah.
He has to take
the
Colby
fight. No, you have to take that fight next. All right, so this fight in itself.
If he puts it down, it's like he's done for.
Colby's next. Although, boy, yeah. See, Usman was like, I don't know, man. Get back in the line. Like, I don't know.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, Usman can also say whatever he wants because
I think he's poking the bear.
I guess if you raid my open workout, I get to say whatever I want.
I will I don't bet on sports, but like if I was putting money on something right now, it's that Usman can say that because if Usman wins, we know Tyron's not getting the immediate rematch.
That's so true.
Like that's like I can make that guarantee. The UFC is not even coming close.
No. Like they don't love Tyron.
They don't love Tyron.
They don't love Tyron.
They'll be happy to not have him as their champion in that division.
So true. All right, the fight. I mean, I know we're not hardcore fight breakdown pickers, but I mean, do you guys like feel convinced one way or other on this, or do you feel it's a 50-50 fight?
I don't feel like I've seen enough of Usman,
right,
to like really. I mean, I've watched all the fights that we've watched, but like, I it's just hard to pick against Tyron at this point because he's such a game planner. He's so meticulous in what he does. Let's be honest, he doesn't take huge risks,
right?
And I just don't know, like. I haven't had to see Usman fight a fighter of that caliber. Even the RDA fight last time around. I mean, RDA's on the tail end. I think we'd all agree of his prime. So for me, it's just, I mean, I've seen Woodley fight higher level fighters and succeed than I have Usman.
Yeah.
So that's not a knock on Usman's skill set. I just don't have the confidence in his skill set that I do in Woodley.
That's it, man. I think that Usman has the tools it would take. I mean, I guess maybe the best way to beat Tyron would be just become lay him out, you know what I mean? Come lay him out quick, you know, with some striking. But to be able to stand up to his wrestling, you know, Usman's going to be able to do that. To be able to set a pace for over 25 minutes, he's going to be able to do that. He's relentless. But, yeah, man, Tyron, when you really look at his body of work and you look at the people he's beat and how he's beat him.
That counter overhand comes fast, man.
I think the wrestling's going to be interesting, though. I think a lot of people want to immediately negate that, but I think his work that he's done recently, I would think, with Askren is going to push him back up on another level. It's not just like Tyron going to his typical corners or his typical camp. I mean, I really think he really put in the effort to step it up because I think he realized this is one where he needs to make sure that his rest is on point. I think I still just don't think – when I look at them too, I think because of that body of work right there, I'm going to push his wrestling over Usman. I think he has enough – to kind of help control the pace a little bit. And I think he's a better overall striker. I think he has crisper hands. But, I mean, Usman does have great hands. I mean, he has a lot of power, but he tends to rely a lot on that wrestling side to kind of give him the chance to set that up. I don't think he's going to get that opportunity.
He doesn't have that one-hitter quitter like Tyron does.
No,
he's
he grinds him down. Yeah. He tires him, and then those strikes do that much more damage because he's already worn his opponent down. But he's going to have a guy now that – Tyron is so strong, and especially the early two or three rounds. I mean, like you're gonna have a hard time grinding out. He's got to tire himself down before you really start to impose. And I think at that point, you know, Kamaru's gonna be feeling on his own as well. And I think with the striking difference, I don't know.
I'm intrigued by this fight.
I am intrigued, and I think Kamaru's a good dude too. I
mean,
I think he would do well.
He gets a bum rap sometimes. He's a good dude.
He does. I mean, guy's always been super nice to me, and I mean, he's always given good interviews. I mean, he's
better
done
when
his
he's
part,
not trash talking.
So.
Like he's a cool guy. Right?
If you didn't hear his scrum today, though, go check out his scrum day. He was on point.
Yeah, I need to go back and listen. I didn't listen.
He made a point where, and the one thing that I will discount is this idea that he doesn't have the one thing that he's great at to beat Tyron Woodley. Because he said to me, he was like, does Rory McDonald have one great thing? And he was like, Rory beat him. He was like,
that's a fair point.
Be better at a bunch of stuff, and that's how
it's hard. Rory's got fucking hard leaps and bounds,
mean,
and that's what he
will
wear people
out.
Pre-broken
nose Rory, I mean, I think might very well be welterweight champion at this point.
So true,
right?
Man.
Like,
that changed things for him.
It changed things. I mean, he can't get punched in the face.
His soul bled out.
Get punched in the face.
His soul bled out with that one.
All right, let's talk about Ben Askren. We kind of touched on him there. First of all, again, if you want to see a fun scrum today, go check out the Tyron Woodley and Ben Askren scrum. Just the visual of it, the whole entertainment value of it, it was hilarious. But, man, Ben Askren, has he become the star of this event or what? I mean,
what a breath of fresh air.
Oh, my God. From the on-sale press conference to you know, this week, you know, media day to open workouts. Man, he has been great. And I'm enjoying having Ben Askren around.
Yeah. He reminds me, like, and this is, I mean, I didn't wrestle in high school, but, like, he reminds me of the guy, like, you're playing basketball with in high school who, like, talks a bunch of trash and you want to beat him so bad, but you just can't because he's better than you at basketball.
Right.
And, like, Ben Askren, like, but it's not serious trash. It's, like, the trash is just meant to annoy you.
Yeah.
Like, he makes fun of your socks. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and, like, he totally
that's
would make
so
fun of your socks.
Like, that,
none of it is
point.
Hurtful, but and it's all funny, and he says all of it with a smile on his face.
I will say this. Okay, so, again, we're kind of talking about the purity of the sport versus – okay, we get it. This is not a pure sport. It is about entertainment value, too. But I've said it a million times, and I'll say it again. Like, I loved Conor McGregor in the beginning.
When he was funny.
Yeah, when he was funny, when he was quick-witted. When he got to the I'm a gangster stuff, I'm like, oh, I don't need that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I love the quick wit and the sharp talk. Like, that's fun. That's what you ask for. He doesn't cuss. So you don't have to worry about bleeping things out. You know what I mean? It's not race. It's not religion. It's not anything. Like, it's just good-natured. And as you said, it's, like, frustrating trash talk because you're like, ah, I want to –
and he's like probably right because he can beat everybody. Yeah. Like it's and like I genuinely have enjoyed it because it's not actually trash talk. It's like good natured ribbing.
Right.
Like, it's
that's it.
Like
it's very Canadian.
I wish our Canadian fighters were as good as he is. But like it's
sorry
has
about
been,
that. Hey, I'm just having a little
and,
fun.
And like he's genuinely like we always talk about guys like seeming like they're having fun. John seemed relaxed, right?
Yes,
like
yes.
He, I don't know that John like. He did seem like he was having a perfectly fine time. But Ben generally, like, he seemed like, you know, you've got a kid.
Yeah.
He seemed like a kid at the playground.
Yeah,
just, like,
just having fun.
Just having fun, laughing around.
So relaxed, so just enjoying the moment.
And because he's not going to say anything controversial, like, he doesn't actually have to worry about watching himself because he's – so when he's talking to the media, he's relaxed and just himself, and it's great.
It is great. And it's funny because – you know, him and Tyron are buddies, man. They go way back. They made it clear they're not fighting each other. Tyron did say he's thinking about a move to middleweight. And I did, you know, ask him about the dynamics. You know, hey, well, if Askren's successful, does that make you want to move up, you know, quicker? Yeah. Because let your buddy get a big payday. Let your buddy get a champion. And, you know, Tyron said, listen, man, he's going to be okay. And Ben immediately, like, even before Tyron could answer, Ben was like, I don't care. Like, I'm fine.
One championship paid him out.
Right. He's done well for himself. And he did say, and it's so true, he's like, there's so many people for me to fight. Like, you think about, like, he's just coming into this division, and he is already riled up so many. Remember, like, when he was first, the discussion was first going on, and all the social media back and forth. Like, dude, there are so many fights you could make with him that could headline cards, that could be co-main events. I
don't want to start naming names and having, you know, I don't want to get over. But, like, I will say, like, I don't think – frankly, like Darren Till's skill set wants any piece of Ben Askren.
Terrible matchup. Terrible matchup.
Like, there's a lot of guys who I just look at and I'm like,
and I like Till, but that's a bad matchup.
Yeah. And there's a lot of guys like that. I mean, I don't think Ponzinibbio is ready for that type of
matchup there too.
And I mean, I do think that the Lawler fight is fascinating because you know Lawler's seen it all. He can do it all. And I am very curious to see, like, if Ben Askren fights an 80% Ben Askren fight, you know, wins the fight, dominates over three rounds, does the whole thing. I'm curious as to how fans react to him.
That's okay, that's the interesting part there too, right? Because Usman, that was brought up to Usman today, and Usman went out of his way to say, listen, he is not an MMA fighter, he is an MMA wrestler, you know, and fans expect a certain type of fight. And you know, I mean, Usman wrestles a lot, so it's not like he can totally discount wrestling. But he said, yes, but you've got to strike a little bit. And I think that is true. I mean, you've got – yes, it doesn't have to be Rock'em Sock'em Robots every time. I mean, listen, I think fans started to love Damian Maia more in the latter stages of his career than the beginning when he basically, like, said, I'm done throwing punches. I'm only doing jiu-jitsu from now on, you know? So I think, you know, there is, you know, there is room for a specialist. But I do agree that if one fight, two fight, three fights happen – and what you're doing is essentially taking someone down and holding them down, the fans are going to turn on
and it must have been – was it New York last year? Like, I'm trying to think. They brought Askren after he was signed. It was when Dana White still had him blocked on Twitter, the whole thing, to a scrum.
Yeah.
And what he said was he was like, it may take a minute, but what I make fans realize is that I make guys quit because they just can't get up.
They just give up. And they're like, dude, just choke me out.
Yeah, and he was like, and people will find that interesting. And I'm – that's great for a hardcore audience that watches one.
Yeah.
I will be curious to see how it goes over when you have a super charismatic, fun guy who you love outside of the octagon who maybe fans in the ring or in the arena are going to boo.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to boo in Vegas, but they're going to boo in some other places.
We'll see. I mean, boy, I'll tell you what, man. It will be interesting. Like, what if you know, what if Robbie Lawler catches him once or twice, and every time he catches him once or twice, a stunned Askren shoots forward, takes him down, and holds him down. Like, the fans will turn on him quick. And
especially because it's Robbie Lawler.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to discount Ben Askren, man. Like I said, it's been amazing, and he's incredibly effective. You don't get to 18 over your career without having degrees. And it's not like he doesn't know how to strike, but he just happens to be really, really, really good
at
wrestling.
There's a reason why people said, like, he's the one guy who, like, we're not entirely sure how George St. Pierre would beat.
That's right.
Because his wrestling's that good.
But it will be interesting because, yeah, fans, especially fans with a couple cocktails in them, you know, they want to see some striking.
And we know the UFC. If he does that, let's say he wins, the fans are showering down boos. I'm sorry, they're not giving you Darren Till next. They're not letting you rack a star with a boring fight.
That's like, so true.
So
yeah. Well,
it's a booking issue as well. So, yeah, I don't know where it goes.
Yeah, we can't let you just snooze through our entire division.
Yeah.
Boy, that's true. All right, I did end up picking Askren in this fight. I don't know. Do you have to make picks anywhere, Danny? Do you do a call?
I've never had to make picks, but I pick Askren.
I'd pick Askren as well. What did you do, Cole Coffey?
I did, Askren.
No, I'm comfortable making
2018 MMA Junkie Picks Champion, Cole Coffey.
I'm heavily – my greatness is heavily weighing down at the bottom of the pick list this year. But I did. I did go Askren on this one.
All right.
For sure.
All right, listen, rounding out the main card, Tisha Torres versus Weili Zhang. I like this fight a lot. I know that Zhang, you know, the Chinese fighter, may not be familiar to a lot of people. They may be surprised this fight is even on the main card, but she can bang, and Tisha Torres is phenomenal as well. Meanwhile, Cody Garbrandt and Pedro Munhoz, a key fight for both those guys. Listen, you know, Pedro Munhoz is a super nice guy.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Cody Garbrandt, I mean, it has been funny, the exchange between the two. But, Danny, tell us, because you had a pretty extensive conversation, you said, with Cody Garbrandt, or at least an extensive observation anyway.
It was literally not a conversation. But that's,
yeah,
so.
It just seems like he's in a – it just seems to me like he's in a good place. Like, those TJ Dillashaw fights, man, I just don't think he was in a good – I mean, I'm not trying to take away from TJ. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I feel like the pressure and the intensity just got to Cody in a bad way.
And, I mean, I'll just say it. I always thought that it was a mistake. I don't know why Cody Garbrandt got an immediate rematch. He hadn't actually defended the title. It was a mistake. It was a mistake for him to take that fight. He should have gone, you know, worked on improving this game for a year and then gone for it. I never understood it. But, yeah, so I'm at Media Day, and for those who don't know, I mean, look, there are a lot of people who inexplicably want one-on-ones when they're on camera. And then there are a lot of people who, I mean, I know with you guys, like, I generally try to give you your time. But, you know, like, there are people when time's running short, if they're doing their thing, you can toss the mic
Absolutely.
In and just get answers. And then there are other guys, and Chuck Mindenhall is one of them. We write, we don't do video, and so he was talking to Cody, and he asked Cody about, you know, getting over the fight and how hard it was, which was the question that I was literally waiting to ask.
Right.
So I just threw my mic in there. Like,
why make him answer it again?
Exactly. And he went on for 4.5 minutes, uninterrupted, talked about absolutely everything. And all of it was, like, genuine. It was about his kid. And honestly, the best quote that I got all of Media Day was he said, after the first TJ fight, he walked into the back and he thought, all right, I lost once. I'm going to have the career of George St. Pierre. And then after the second loss, he went into the back and he went, all right, I'm going to have the career of Daniel Cormier. And I was
amazing.
Like, wow.
That is amazing.
And then, but he was still going after 4.5 minutes and time was running short on our availability. So without asking a question, I just left. I got 4.5 minutes of someone else's question. And I was like, this is a story I'm writing tomorrow, and I put no effort into
Look,
that.
I'll tell you, I'm intrigued by both of these fights as well. Cody Garbrandt, as you said, man, he's a phenomenal fighter. He's put on some phenomenal displays. Did not look good against TJ Dillashaw. As you said, I agree. I think he took a mistake taking that fight again. I think the UFC made a weird decision by booking it. I think maybe – I mean, I know the folks at WME and everybody were, like, super high on Cody Garbrandt and wanted him to be the guy.
I think they needed L.A., right?
Yeah.
I don't think – if that card had not been early August in L.A., I don't think that they booked it.
Meanwhile, Pedro Munhoz is a phenomenal fighter as well, flown under the radar, but has fought some top guys. And – you know, flies under the radar because he's not one of these trash talkers. You know, he's not going to go at it. I mean, those guys have been, you know, in the build-up, they've been complimenting each other's clothes and their style.
Let's go back to what we just said. Part of why I think it's marketable is because it's been funny. Not trash talking has been as marketable as anything else because they've made us laugh. I'm
I agree. I love that fight, and I love Tisha Torres versus Wiley Zee. Tisha Torres.
Was Tisha's last fight, Joanna?
Ooh, good question, was it? Yeah, it was. God, that's been a while, man. I didn't realize it had been that long.
She didn't even get crushed in that fight. Like, she lost, but like, it wasn't like a bad loss.
No, but Zhang, super tough. Zhang is legit. I know. Legit. I this whole main card is ridiculous. As I said, our traffic has been okay this week. I mean, I use that just as a gauge of interest. You know what I mean? And so our traffic has been okay. I don't think it's necessarily reflected kind of the quality of this card top to bottom. But we'll see. I think there'll be some results. Quickly, because we could spend a whole – I mean, we could just break down every fight in this card. I mean, it's that good of a card. Zabit Magomedsherbov versus Jeremy Stephens. Dude, amazing fight. How about their stare down? You know, Zabit, normally the very, like, just whatever kind of guy. I thought he – just reading the body language there, I thought Zabit kind of stood over him and was like,
yep, yeah, let's, they got go nose to nose, like, practically.
We're going to go at it. And you know Jeremy Stephens is going to bang. I love that fight. You got to love that. Misha Sirkinov, I know as a Canadian here, I mean, you got to talk to him a little bit. I want you to share a little bit of the story because Misha Sirkinov versus Johnny Walker. Of course, Johnny Walker is the hot ticket right now. That's the guy everybody's talking about. But it's funny because, and I don't know if this is how your conversation started, but if you saw that stare down at Media Day, after the stare down, Dana pulled Misha aside and talked to him.
Which I've almost never seen, ever.
Like, no, especially on a prelim fighter. Yeah. I mean, no disrespect to Misha.
And we forgot that Dana had cut Misha like a couple years back.
They had
back.
Some contract issues.
Yeah, I guess he didn't cut him, but said
they were like, yeah, go on.
Him.
We don't want him.
And at the time, Misha was, I mean, all of us thought, hey, this guy could be fighting for the title, like, you know,
right.
very quickly. But
he had that
yeah,
nice run.
So I saw it, and I mean, like you do, because it's Dana doing it. So I walked up to Misha.
It's out of the norm. It's out of the norms. So you're asking about out of the
and
norm.
And big smile on my face, and I sort of said, so Misha, like, what did you and Dana talk about? Thinking back to that conflict in 2017, and this is credit to Dana White, and I also think it's worth noting whatever happens on Saturday night between the two of them, because it's pretty brave and it's got to be really tough. But Misha said, he was like, yeah, well, Dana had heard that my wife has breast cancer, and he just pulled me aside to just kind of, you know, wish us the best and tell us that if there's anything the UFC can do and what have you. And he was like, honestly, man, like, your boss knowing what's going on with you and, like, taking the time to you know, really let you know. And he was like, that was the only chance we were going to have to talk. It wasn't meant to be public.
Right.
And so I obviously immediately sort of switched the interview up, and we talked. And, I mean, Misha's going through some shit right now. I mean, that's the most painful thing. And they've been together for a long, long time. And I can't believe that he's – my understanding is she was like, you got to go to Vegas. You got to train for this fight. You got to do your thing. But – I mean, just you know, your heart goes out to them because that's about as rough as it gets.
Ooh. That's heavy.
Yeah,
it makes
and,
it
but
all
credit,
real.
Credit, you know what? Sometimes I think Dana, you either universally love him or you universally hate him, and credit to him and the, you know, for taking the time to make sure, you know, his whatever was.
I know it's
well, he's certainly talking the talk right now. It'd be nice to see legit backing up that statement, like you
well,
know,
listen,
coming
he,
out and really
listen,
doing some
I,
stuff. So
I know
in the past
I know
he's
it's easier
done it,
to
you know?
I know it's easier to bash Dana White than it is defend him. And don't get me wrong; it's not like everything he does is perfect,
right?
But there are a lot of stories behind the scenes that we don't ever get a chance to talk about, and things that I've heard, but it's like, this doesn't come out. But like he's done some things like out of his pocket, you know, paid for
and on this one I think it's universally
whatever,
good.
You know?
Let's also like
or at least
I mean,
like get somebody to the right doctor. You know, like
well,
dude, like you could never talk to that. You know,
I don't mean to get political. It's a little bit different in Canada.
That's true.
Like, stuff is like we have universal health care, so that's like I don't know that Misha needs a big paycheck too.
Sons of
bitches.
I'm
see
sorry,
his
but
face
like,
when he said he's like we have universal
no,
health care.
No, that's not how I said it. I just legitimately
that's
I don't
how
know
it
that.
Sounded.
No, I don't know that Misha needs a cut.
Sounded.
Needs a
I
check.
I wish we
cut.
Had it, dude. I wish we had it, man.
But
trust me.
Either way, like it was one of those things where like, and Johnny Walker seems like a great weirdo,
right? He's good. By the way, go ahead. I don't want to interrupt.
I just did want to say that it was such a reminder because Misha's had, you know, really quick rise and a bit of a down, and I was kind of going in with had the blinders on, and I was like, this is a fight Misha needs to win, and it's kind of a reminder for me that, like, these people are people. You know, they're humans, and I know I'm being a little bit corny, but, like, Misha genuinely seemed affected by it, and he's obviously super bummed out, and, like, it's just I do hope that, you know, if he does go out and have a terrible performance, you know, people, you know, do remember that you know, there's other shit that
these are people, yeah. man. That's what people forget sometimes when they watch these fights. Like, these are people that do – that deal with some shit.
I had a very famous fighter tell me once, like, he had a terrible performance, and about a year and a half later I asked him. I was like, what happened there, man? You weren't yourself. And he was like, my girlfriend broke up with me 3 weeks before. We'd been together for 4 years. And he was like, and I didn't feel like doing any training or anything.
Right.
And he was like, I can't say that. No one's going to feel bad for me. But he was like, it really affected me.
Yeah, that's so true, right? Like, everybody's going to make fun of you or talk shit. But, yeah, dude, but who hasn't been down in the dumps when the
you don't feel like going to work.
Yeah, yeah, you know?
So,
yeah, that's tough. It's a good, you know, Johnny Walker, by the way, just a little quick side note, not quite up to the level of that, but he will be the first fighter to ever wear the Thailand international kit going into
that's
the
cool.
fight. Yeah, he's been fighting for that, I guess. You know, he lives there now.
I think it was Anthony telling me that this is the first ever card where the main and co-main, every single fighter is black.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Yeah. It's seeing the diversity of the sport. All right, Alejandro Perez versus Cody Stammen. By the way, I love this fight. I like both these guys. Alejandro Perez has been one of my favorites. Maybe it's because my wife's from Mexico and my kids have Mexican. I don't know, but I like Alejandro, especially because he's trying to learn English so bad, and he's, like, insisting on doing interviews in English, which I respect, and I can tell he gets a little nervous and he gets a little scared, but damn it, man, I just love somebody that'll do that. So I love that. This is a good fight. A guy, by the way, that's I believe undefeated in his last 7 or 8 in the UFC. I mean, that's incredible. Not getting any respect whatsoever. But Cody, of course, fell victim to that nasty Aljamain Sterling submission. But he's got some skills as well. Prelims, I should say, opened up with Mickey Gall versus Diego Sanchez. I'm torn on this fight, too. I mean, how do you not love Mickey Gall, dude, with all the swagger? The way, I mean, his path through the UFC has been incredible. But then Diego, you're talking about, you know, tough one, man, and Diego embracing his weirdness, and I love the weirdness of Diego Sanchez.
None of us
he
are
is
like,
legend.
I know none of us are fashion writers or whatever.
No,
just
no.
Please describe.
I did contemplate what color socks I was going to wear with my shoes today.
Khaki shorts, limited or whatever. Yeah.
What? Like, describe that outfit that he wore yesterday. I don't think it was a bandana. I think it was like a head tie.
Oh yeah, he had the do-rag on. It was solid.
Was it a full do-rag?
I don't know. I thought it was maybe like a shirt he used and just wrapped it up like a headband or something.
And he had a backpack as far as I could tell. Like he looked like
I love.
I was just so focused on his face because he was like huffing and puffing and doing his thing. I love Diego, man. He's a fucking character. Now I don't even pay attention to his clothes. I just want to see what his face is.
My only thing
like.
I say this every time Diego gets in is I hope it's not sad.
I know. Yeah. And I think this could be an interesting fight. I mean, I think, you know, not cutting weight is good for him.
Yep.
So we'll see.
I'm genuinely interested. Like, Mickey Gall's had a weird path.
Absolutely.
But I don't think he's a bad fighter. He needs time to develop.
And like, he wanted this fight, too. Yeah, okay. Mickey wanted this fight. Fight Pass prelims, Charles Byrd, Edmund Shahbazyan, Macy Chiasson versus Gina Mazzani, Hannah Seifert versus Pollyanna Viana. I guess, as I say, I mean, the ones that stick out to me, of course, there's a couple, but Gina Mazzani, she lives and trains here in Vegas, so seeing her fight against Macy, who's dropping down to 135, interesting. Hannah Seifert's one of the most interesting human beings in terms of just how they look. I mean, just timid, you know, like almost scared, and then all of a sudden they start banging. I mean, that's great. But Pollyanna Viana, I mean, the story of her, you know, just destroying the mugger in Brazil and then now coming to the fight. Interesting there. Edmund Shahbazyan with the Edmund Tavernian protege there. I did think it's cool. Edmund Shahbazyan, I was kind of joking with him because he fought in the Contender Series in the Tough Gym, right? Then his UFC debut was on the Tough Finale at the Palms. Now he's fighting at T-Mobile Arena in his third fight, so I'm pretty sure his next fight's going to be Raider Stadium. You know what I mean? Like, they just keeps getting the bigger and bigger venues over there. But he's fighting Charles Byrd. So anyway, look, this card is sick, top to bottom. Any stories that stuck out or anything that we didn't talk about for either one of you guys?
I mean, you kept stopping during the card and asking me for my stories, so I do feel like I gave you.
No, I love it. That's what people want to hear.
But
man.
I don't have, like, I'll be honest with you, like, the early prelims. I love, but I didn't talk to anyone. As you said, man, like, this is just a fun fight card. Like,
it's solid.
And with great, legitimate headliners up top.
Like, main and co-main title fights, man. Two legit championship fights. Two super, you know, a couple of, you know, defending champions that have established themselves in the division. Not like it's their first events and we don't know if they're real. It's good fights.
Yeah.
It's good fights. And I like the fact that The last card, I think we had four female fights. This has got three of them on it.
Yep.
Start in the night, two fights back to back. I think it's a nice tone. I mean, I'm looking forward to the card, and I like the fact that they're letting it to the women to kind of start the night off strong and stuff.
And you know, I will say, big takeaway for me, and no one who doesn't come to open workouts in Vegas will understand what I'm talking about. They got rid of the DJ.
That's right. There's no longer a DJ.
I'm so thrilled.
Why you got it? Why you got to bang on AL3 like that, man?
I respect
AL3. AL3 is a big fan.
He's
a friend of the road show.
He's a friend of the road show. I will say though, they usually set him up right next to us, and it's kind of loud.
That's
right
my
there.
Issue. Yeah, it's the speakers.
AL3's fine. It's just the speakers there.
That's an extra day they got to bring him out. Well, especially if it was like 2 days out, you know. They'd have to pay for him.
If AO3 is out there and listening, I don't want him thinking I'm talking trash about him.
Yeah.
It's a very small space.
It's very loud.
And it's very loud.
Yeah. Like, the speakers are basically designed to be for the entire space, but because of where we are, like, it's literally just right behind
us.
And
there's nothing worse than a guy, like, because he has to hype up, dude. Like, he's his own hype man.
Yeah.
When you're just like, I need everything to be quiet so I can transcribe this interview. And you've got this guy being like, everybody get loud.
It's not good for transcribing.
Well, it's definitely, I mean, I could definitely see it because it's a cost-cutting move. But also now they've just like, what songs do you want, fighters? And they let the fighters pick a song. Why are you going to bring AL3 out to play that kind of DJ?
Yep.
Let the audio guy do it. Whereas AL3 creates an atmosphere with the songs that he plays. Right. So it's like he's overkill at this point, you know, because now they're just like, all right, Danny, you give me your songs. John, you give me your songs. And then Kenny, okay, you put your songs. And then we're just going to hit this.
I do kind of like
I even talked to Tracy. He's like, it's like a playlist. He legit puts them all in a playlist and just hits fucking play.
I kind of like that, though. I kind of like that fighters get to pick their own music now.
Sure. But that's why I think, like, that's why AL3 is not there anymore. I mean, like, they just decided, let's make it more about the fighters. They pick their songs. And, I mean, like,
of all the musical choices the UFC makes, I don't know if it's AL or AO, whatever AO3
AL.
Is.
Yeah.
Albert Lanise is the
third.
Not
the problem.
Right.
That's
all
I'm saying. All right. I'm glad he's not there.
All right, let's do this. We need a couple frosty beverages here. We might need a little break to kind of reset and those sort of things. What I'm going to do is play a quick little interview I had with Brian Ortega and catching up with T-City, obviously a good friend of the road show as well. He's recovering from that difficult loss and trying to get back to action. He's got a new commercial with Modelo. He's a star. I thought the commercial came out really, really well. So I want to play that quick little interview for you while we reset, and then when we come back, we'll talk about ONE Championship, because ONE Championship capitalized on UFC 235 night. So here is T-City.
Right, Brian, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, brother?
Not much, man. Good to catch up with Mr. TV commercial star, man. How you feeling? Moving up in the world.
Oh man, it feels good, bro. It feels good to work with someone, you know, who, I don't know, man. It feels amazing, you know, when you work with brands that pretty much you guys are the same people almost, you know, when they want the brand.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, Brian. I mean, I know you're kind of a guy of principle, man. I know you're not going to just align yourself with anybody and just throw your name on something for the sake of it. So, you know, what was it like for you to come to this decision, to be a part of this, for this partnership to come together? What made you say, yeah, man, I want to be aligned with this brand?
I mean, when you really look at everything and you study it, who doesn't like a casual drink every once in a while? Who doesn't like a little beer here and there? That's one thing. But when you align yourself with someone, like especially like Modelo, it was perfect because they're called a fighting spirit. I was like, name someone that calls each other fighting spirit. Like, well, that's exactly what I am, man. I feel like my whole life, everything I've always done was always, you know, it's always been a fight. And I've never quit, and I've always had this strong spirit with me. And when I actually sat down and talked with them, and we actually had good conversations, I was like, dude, I vibe with you guys really well. And when we shot the commercial in Mexico, we had nothing but fun shooting, and it wouldn't even seem like I was doing any type of work. It was like, man, we're all having a great time. We all love the same music. Like, it just couldn't have gotten perfect, man. This was really cool.
Yeah.
I'm happy it came into my life.
The commercial's awesome, man. I wanted to ask you about that, man, the concept. I thought it was cool. I mean, Coach James is as much a star as you are in this, man. But I loved it, man. I mean, knowing you guys the way I do, the team that you are, and kind of how you guys are together, man, I thought it was an awesome concept for a commercial. Did you Did you have say in that, or how did that all come together?
That was all there, man. That was when we met. When we sat down and we talked, that's kind of what they said. You know what? You are what we are looking for. You know, we're looking for the fighting spirit. We're looking for stories that, of people who, like I said, who had to go through crazy and trouble, you know, these ups and downs, and still come out on top. And they go, and that's you. And I was honored by that. I told them, you know what? Like, I'm honored. I'm humbled. And let's get this show cracking.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about that. It's so cool because, man, I feel like right now you're getting as much attention, as much love, you know, as much respect as ever. And of course, you're coming off a loss. But I mean, you know, you're getting tweeted by Halle Berry. You're in a commercial right here. I mean, has that been interesting for you to process, to know? I mean, I doubt you wanted to lose. I mean, everybody wants to win every fight. But you're getting as much respect now as you ever did. What has that experience been like for you?
I feel like I've been blessed, you know, because there's a lot of people who, like you said, man, they take a loss in their career, and a lot of people really, you know, the fans, they tend to forget about you, and they tend to, you know, it just tends to be a rough patch in a lot of fighters' lives. But for me, I left it all in there, you know, I left it all in that cage. There's not one ounce I did not have one reserve on me. I threw it all out, and I gave my fans. I literally cut my heart open, and I gave it to you guys. And I feel like everyone respected me for that. They loved me for that, and that's something that I never. Like I said, it was my first loss, but if there's a way I was going to lose, I'm happy with that way.
Mm. How long did it take you to get to that position? I mean, obviously, I saw you briefly afterwards, and I could tell you were disappointed. But as you said, man, it was a hell of a fight. Everybody was just buzzing after that, talking about what two warriors you guys were. I mean, were you able to realize that right away, that it was positive, or were there down moments? I mean, how long did it take you to get to that realization?
No, man, it was bad for a little bit. I'll be honest. You know, I didn't watch the fight till, I want to say, maybe like a month. I was just kind of just sad that, you know, obviously things didn't work out my way, but I knew that wasn't me that night, and I was just frustrated and upset at the fact that that's the, even, you know, given, like, okay, you have a heart, you have a chin, but that still wasn't me, though. I'm glad that the people know that about me, but that's not the brand or change that could have been in there that night, especially when, like I said, my nose broke and my hand broke. It just did not work out for me well that night. And I was upset, and then there's people close to me in my circle that, like I said, I went through a lot of changing things, you know, especially with the team, a lot of people turning their back on me and saying these things that I never thought people would say. So I spent a month kind of just hiding out a little bit and kind of going through my surgeries, right? I had my nose surgery, I had my hand surgery, I had to just fix everything up. Finally, I said, you know what? Let me get this right. I go, let me look at the fight, let me study. It's time to really face reality here. Let's go. Let's move forward. And once I did, I saw the fight for the first time. I was not upset. I said, you know what? I did better than I thought I did in my head. All these comments that people in the inner circle are saying, I go, forget about it. I go, we gotta get rid of these people already. And I don't know, man. I feel like God used this time to help me clean out house, you know? Help me clean the house out.
Yeah. You know, I know you're not a kind of guy that would ever make excuses, but I did hear behind the scenes that you were pretty sick that night. Is that something that you're willing to admit or discuss, or how were you feeling? I mean, you say you weren't yourself. Was that part of it?
Yeah, man. I'll admit it. Yeah, I was sick, but I don't use it as an excuse, nor am I saying that, you know, I lost because of that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I went in sick. There's a lot of things that happened, even like I said, drama within the camp. But I went out there ready, you know, I always have cards stacked against me. So no matter how the cards are stacked, I was still looking at it like I'm still going to win tonight. Mm-hmm. And like I said, man, I felt like once the hand and the nose broke, it kind of just looked like, well, this is really not going my way. But in the fifth round, I go, I'll be the TCD everyone knows and pull out a rabbit hat out of the hat. You know? I was like, I'm still going to show you guys why I'm not quitting. And unfortunately, you know, the doctor stopped it, and he did his job well. But, you know, I always want to go in there still, no matter what, no matter what the odds are against. Like, I'm going to show you guys. And it didn't happen. You know, it didn't happen. And I was upset. I'm like, I'm not. But I'm happy. Overall, I'm happy everything played out the way it did. You know, like I told you, if there was one way to lose, and usually when you lose, your stock goes down. My stock went up.
That's true. What's the next move, Brian? Give us give us the update. You know, are you back healthy yet? Are you back training full speed? What's the next move for you?
I have about 6 more weeks before I can finally punch again and use my nose, or get hit in my face again. Really, if I use it. I don't know, man. I'm looking at his division and I'm seeing Max move up. I don't know if he's going to come back down, especially become successful.
Yep.
I have no idea with that situation yet. He's got a great fight in front of him. I'm a fan of both of them, actually, in that fight. And I look at the division right now, and I only see me and Aldo, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I see Aldo beat the guys that I didn't fight, and I beat the guys that Aldo didn't fight. And I feel like together we kind of beat the whole division. And he's coming off a good 2-5 win streak, and I'm coming off which is my first loss, and like you said, not in a bad way. And we're at the top. So if Max decides to stay, we might make it to the belt, and if he comes back down, then we'll fight each other to fight Max again.
I love it, man. That makes sense to me. I love it. I love it. All right, man. Well, if that perfect world, give us an idea. When would that happen? Whether it be for the belt, whether it be number one contender, perfect world, when does that happen? When do you think you're good enough to go?
Let's make it L.A. Staples Center in the summer.
I like it. Even better. Call in the location and everything.
Everything. Let's do it.
All right, welcome back to MMA Roadshow. That was Brian Ortega. I love catching up with that guy. Man, I mean, I hate to hear that he went through the depths to get through where he is now, but it's glad to have him back. And I'm okay with that Aldo fight, man. I'm down with that. All right, we switched things up a little bit. We love Danny Austin. He did a phenomenal job of breaking down UFC 235. We love Cole Coffey, but he was complaining over there. You know, he does that from time to time. So we switched it up. Oscar Willis, which, by the way, if you've been listening to the MMA Roadshow lately, I mean, He's coming for my job, I'm pretty sure. He's back. And, of course, Ant Walker is here as well, who made a recent appearance. I mean, the crew is building here, man. I feel good about this.
It's feeling like Voltron right now.
Oh, that just takes me back to Mayweather, poor Voltron. That was so ridiculous. All right, listen, we talked a lot about UFC 235, so I don't really want to rehash that. But what I wanted to kind of bring you guys in is because, you know, we talked a little bit at the beginning of the show about ONE Championship and what they did tonight, which I thought was brilliant on their part because, I mean, I don't think any of us has ever covered that much ONE Championship in our lives. I may be wrong. Maybe you guys have been, you know, hammering the ONE Championship beat. But, man, getting us all to go there, I mean, bringing big names. Of course, Vitor was an amazing addition at the end. But Demetrius, Eddie Alvarez being there, Misha, Rich Franklin. I have not seen Rich Franklin in person for a while, man.
Is he looking, dude?
Yeah, he looks great.
he looks good.
That was the first time I've ever seen him in person, and he looks more like Jim Carrey in person.
He really does.
Than he does.
Oh,
on TV,
those old school comparisons are so true, man. I haven't seen Rich in person in forever, and again, knowing that he's been with ONE Championship, but it was cool to see him out there. All right, but let's talk about it. Now, they were kind enough to bring us in there tonight. I thought the setup itself was beautiful, man. I thought what they did inside Extreme Couture. I mean, Oscar works out there. My kid works out there. We're in there a lot. It was funny. I walked into the front door. I was checking in at the front desk, and I was like, hey, where are they setting up at tonight? And he was like, you didn't look in the window yet, did you? I'm like, I looked in. I'm like, holy shit. They got a whole set in there, man. They had built everything. I thought they did a phenomenal job. Pretty good turnout, man. Media turnout was strong. I'll admit, I don't know who all the media people were, but media turnout was strong. Fan turnout was pretty good. I was a little worried because if you've ever been to Extreme Couture, the parking there sucks. Like, even if you're just going there to work out, it's hard to find a place to park. So I was kind of worried that people were just going to give up and leave. But overall, man, I thought it was just the turnout. Everything was impressive. Now,
It was a little bit labored, right? I mean, you know what? And I can't blame it. It's their first foray into the United States. They're trying to do big, man. They're trying to go strong. But they did, you know, they had like an intro at the beginning, and then they had an open workout, and then they had a Q&A, and then they had scrums. And next thing you know, it's like 2 hours. I mean, you know, hey, my kid was there, and, you know, my kid loves fighting. He wanted to, you know, see some open workouts, take some pictures. But, you know, next thing you know, you're a fan, and you've been there for 2 hours, and it's kind of the evening time, and it kind of drug on a little bit. So, I don't know. I just want to kind of get your guys' impressions overall, because I thought this thing was a really positive thing, and I thought it was brilliant. Like, honestly, I think I was talking to Danny earlier today. Like, I don't see why, like, for instance, the UFC is going to Atlanta, right? The Lima brothers train in Atlanta. Like, why not just – Do a gym day there and bring some of your Bellator fighters. Like, you know, a bunch of people are going to be there for the UFC. Hell with it, man. Have no shame. Just piggyback. I mean, maybe it looks like a chicken kind of move or a cheap kind of move. But, dude, if it gets you the results you want, like, I think you should do it. So I thought the move was good. I thought the execution maybe could have been better. Did you do the LA one also?
I didn't do the LA one.
Okay, we didn't.
I didn't do that one either.
You didn't do it either?
No. Okay. I considered it, but I didn't want to take the time off from my day job.
Okay. So what did you guys – give me your impressions of tonight.
I do think it was a good move. I mean, if you are in the mixed martial arts business and you are not the UFC, you have to piggyback off the UFC. No matter what, like it or not, they are the brand standard. They are the ones who set the tone for the sport itself. So when there is a big event in town and you've got some fighters that you think can bring a little electricity to your brand, you just got to go ahead and do it. You got to do it while those people are there. There are not many other times where there's going to be that much media around. There's not going to be that many fans around other than when the UFC is there. So that's the time to strike.
I 100% agree. So if we talk about their hits, what they got today, great turnout, I thought, the fans. Extreme Couture is not exactly in the middle of Vegas either. It's 20 minutes away from the strip, and if you're here for the fights, you got to travel. I thought they had a great turnout, far more than I was expecting. You know, they made the fighters accessible. I haven't really seen fighters at, like, table signing stuff, but that's really good for fans. You know, that'll
that's
keep
what the
them.
USC used that, that's, to
yeah,
do.
That's old throwback
school.
To MMA.
That's old school.
But, boys, I think we would be wrong if we didn't discuss the biggest takeaway from this. The MC was the most enthusiastic man to have ever lived on this planet. And
I am so sorry that I can't remember his name because he does their – like, he's their broadcaster. He works with Chiavello, and I'm so sorry that I can't remember his name.
Right.
But yes,
he loves his job.
My goodness, even I will, dude. Have you guys seen the schmo?
Yeah.
Okay, the schmo is a guy that used to work for USA Today Sports at some point. I think he's on his own now. The schmo at one point even came up to me and was like, "Man, I thought I had energy." Like that dude has energy. And I apologize because I talked to him before the thing started. And he was super nice. He kind of explained to me how everything was going to lay out because I was trying to figure out how things were going to work. And so he's a super nice guy. But yes, at some point I was like, "Bro, chill out, bro. Take it down a notch."
Like, even
good.
It was
so
funny. Even before the whole thing began, when he was testing, he was doing the sound check. He was just as hyped up.
Yeah, all he needed to do was take maybe 70-80% down, and he'd have been on. But no, what I do think as well, and I think this is a valid criticism. Like, I think in the day and age, I understand why they want to make their big impact. They want to come out here and be like, "This is why you need to watch us. We're not some small rinky-dink promotion. We're actually a big deal." But I don't really understand the value in standing up there and being like, "We are the biggest MMA promotion in Asia. We are seen by 4.7 billion people worldwide."
You know what it is? It's interesting, right? Because I've been fortunate enough to go over Asia a lot of times, and you do realize, like, a Western company trying to do business in the East doesn't always work. And I think that was almost a little tone deaf on their part. Yeah. Like, they were bringing their Eastern business philosophy and coming over to the West, and it was like, "Bro, you don't have to do this." Like, even the fans. I mean, do you think the fans want to sit there and watch and listen to a media Q&A? No, the fans, they want to get their photos. They want to get their autographs. They want to talk to – they don't want to hear a media Q&A. And it was funny because, like, I don't know. Like, I didn't even ask any questions. And I didn't even ask – I ended up answering a question from Vitor Belfort.
Yeah, you were, like, the last half of the whole thing.
So weird. I didn't even ask questions because I was like, "Dude, let's just get through this so the fans can get their pictures and we can get our scrums," you know. And maybe, hopefully, I wasn't rude by doing that, but that was kind of my philosophy. But I appreciate what they do, but I believe that they need to tweak things a little bit. All right, let's talk about the signing of Vitor Belfort, because first of all, I want to say this. I have loved every signing they've made, and I like this signing too for them, man. I mean, dude, bringing on Misha Tate, brilliant. Demetrius Johnson, Eddie Alvarez, Vitor Belfort. I think it's a smart signing. I think it's a really smart signing. But here's one I ask, because I thought, you know, Vitor, at one point on the stage, he made this impassioned kind of plea about the state of mixed martial arts. And I think it's not far off from what we started talking with Danny earlier, is that, you know, it is like, I remember a time when I hated the comparisons to the WWE, because I was like, no, this is real, this is real. And he was like, dude, this is getting like WWE. And I don't disagree with him. Like, I know you work for the Mac Life, sir, and no offense to your boss who has facilitated much of this. He's a master at it. I mean, there's no question about it. But it is kind of this entertainment era or whatever. But here's what I find interesting. So, you know, Vitor's like, dude, we got to get away from this. We got to get away from this. And I agree with that to a point. But at the same time, your boss has generated a lot of money and a lot of pay-per-views. And I just wonder, like, is that – philosophy like well guided, or is it silly to be like, dude, we can't get away from this?
Well, two words, value proposition. the two most important words, and I'm still trying to figure out what it means. I think there is a middle ground
you
to be
need
had.
To go to Harvard Business School, sir.
I know. I mean, Harvard Business School built one championship, apparently. one thing for sure, I mean, Vitor is going to Vitor. He's still very much himself and just as happy to be Vitor and the young lion or the old dinosaur, whichever nickname he's going by right now. But I think there is definitely a middle ground to be had. No matter what, no matter how much we want to talk about martial arts as a respect culture, as something to breed discipline and honor in people, which it definitely does, but we're still talking about sports entertainment. Yeah. And a lot of times respect isn't entertaining to people.
Well, you'll say
coffee chiming in. Mitch Chilson is the gentleman's name, by the way. Wait, so
thank you very much.
Kudos to you, Mitch Chilson. You did a phenomenal job. But you can tone it down just a touch. But no, you're right. I think you're dead. And I don't let you come, but I think you're dead on. There's a middle ground, right? There's somewhere in between.
It's 100% a middle ground, but it's also like what behavior gets rewarded. You know, and that's what amplifies it, right? If I behave like this and this is my reward, I'll behave like that even more next time, right? And that's, you know, it's funny. Vitor says about it's becoming WWE on the same day Colby shows up with his megaphone, his title. Which I have to be like, yeah.
Which we all said we didn't necessarily hate.
But understand how necessary it was for him to do
what
that.
What you do gets rewarded, right? And then you give a positive feedback to that, and that's what it's
– I think in the scrum, Vitor said something pretty good where we kind of pushed him on that a little bit. He said, listen, I'm not saying that, you know, that you can't have a Conor McGregor, but you can only have one Conor McGregor.
I agree with that.
You don't have that. And it does kind of remind me of like the Chael Sonnen era where, you know, everybody started trying to mimic Chael Sonnen, and now I feel like it's everybody trying to mimic Conor McGregor. And I think what he says, right? So if that's the philosophy, I think I'm okay with that. Like, not like if you have a Conor McGregor, then go full Conor McGregor, but don't tell everybody else to go full Conor McGregor.
Also, I will say this about, like, Vitor had a point, like, oh, you know, we want to get back to the days of honor and stuff like that. But then a part of this entertainment era is also like the weird matchups they do, and then he's pitching a boxing match with Roy Jones Jr. Like, okay, it's not the same as, like, you know, there's still respect in that, but it's like, well, it's all hand in hand, right? You know, you create the entertainment era because people are talking shit, and then to capitalize off that, you go, well, what's this matchup and this match going to look like, you know? So sort of a little bit of hypocritical there.
What did you guys think about Demetrius Johnson? First of all, I found it kind of interesting. You know, they had everybody on stage, right? So they had, you know, five people up on stage. You had Rich Franklin, Misha Tate. You had Demetrius. You had Eddie. And you had Vitor as well. First of all, DJ got the least amount of questions again, which I was like, it never changes. But it was interesting. You know, the scrum, I thought, is his attitude, man. He was very upbeat. You know, he did kind of laugh at the fact that I was like, dude, I thought you hated media. Now you're doing more media than ever. You know, he talked about flyweight. So, I mean, dealing with Demetrius, what did you think? Because I did feel like there's definitely a different energy about him right now. I mean, I think he definitely feels way more at home, way happier. But, I don't know, being around Demetrius, what did you think?
I thought that he definitely seemed a lot more at ease than when we last saw him at UFC 227. I remember I was standing there with you when he said, hey, I want to collect all the belts. I want to go to 1FC and do what I do over there. And we all really laughed. I remember talking to you like right after that, and just like, yeah, right. And we all chuckled, like, that's ridiculous. Like, yep. But now it's there.
Look at the foreshadowing. It was right there.
And like one thing that we all kept saying, you know, all the media guys getting together during that whole fight week was that he just clearly did not want to be there. He seemed so disinterested in everything going on as far as the UFC machine. You know, I tried to Danny and I were in a scrum with him, and it was just it was like pulling teeth. Until we started talking about video games, he just didn't want to open up at all.
Yeah.
But this time, he was so open to talking about mixed martial arts, to talking about fighting, that we hadn't seen it. And I think to see a guy as great as him feel appreciated, feel comfortable, and it's not like he has a wooden personality. The guy is charismatic. He has a lot of personality. He just doesn't choose to show it all the time.
You know what? Maybe that was it. Today – not that, because off camera, look, he drops F-bombs stuff.
Yeah.
But I did feel like it was closer to him today.
To the words out of my mouth. Like, so there's listeners are going to be probably like, well, fuck, why don't we get to see it? But there are a lot of fighters who are not who you see them on camera. When the camera's on, they're a bit more stiff. That's exactly what I was thinking of. But like, there's a lot of people where you're like, damn, if that guy, Cejudo until recently, like, there's a lot of people who's like, well, if that guy showed up on camera, they'd be a lot more popular. And for a long time, I think everyone in the media is like, yeah, Demetrius off camera is a different guy than the one on camera.
Yep.
And today, like you said, he's not full Demetrius off camera, but he was definitely like chilled and way more close to like who I think he is. And I found it interesting as well during the scrum, he was essentially said like, I was always ending up here.
Yeah.
You know, like no matter if I was winning in the UFC, I wanted to come here. So I think because of that, you get an insight into his attitude. Like he wanted to go here, he's chill, he's happy. There's not this like pressure of I have to promote this. My division, I have to promote my fights. He's like, hey, I'm here to fight.
And he's very specifically cited that he is not trying to promote a pay-per-view. Like, right. That is like, hey, they've got TV deals. People will watch.
Yep.
So he's just there to fight.
An average of 20 million.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Coming from 700,000.
Think of the growth, John. Think of the growth.
I mean, that is exponential growth like we've never seen before.
That is inside
joke. It's almost unbelievable.
If you watch the stream, though, this fact got repeated seven times.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, just before I forget, I just got to say this. Like, as far as Mitch's hyperbolic statements at the event, maybe if you had one or the other, we'd be willing to accept it more. If you're saying the hyperbolic statements in a calmer, more monotone voice, that sounds more businesslike.
Right.
All right, cool. But if you're just saying you know fun stuff, but it's not all these outrageous claims, but you say it in an outrageous way, we'll accept it. But you can't have both.
You didn't have both, then you wouldn't have had the fun facts that he popped out with while they were working out halfway
through. If you knew the facts, you would have won a T-shirt. I knew the facts, but you know, since I had a credential on, I was like, all right, I'll let the fans keep the T-shirts.
All right, here's the so at the end of the day, they made it pretty clear that they're going to try to host events here in the United States, right? I mean, Rich Franklin hinted at it. I mean, they're doing this BR Live app. And I guess maybe that takes away the question that I wanted to ask if Rich Franklin had actually been available, because I do wonder, like, at the end of the day, I love what they stand for. I actually do really – I love what they stand for.
Like, I agree.
Traditional martial arts. I love the fact that they do, like, an MMA fight and then a kickboxing fight. And the way, like, that's fun. It's cool. It's different. Because, look, if all you're trying to do is copy the UFC, like, you're going to fail. So make sure you carve out a little bit different niche. I like what they do. This is a big world with a lot of markets out there and a lot of athletes. I love what they do. But it did always make me wonder, like, what in the heck? I mean, how do you make people interested in watching foreign fighters at 6 a.m. in the morning on a Friday or Saturday? Because, you know, they do Friday and Saturday events. How do you make people interested? And that always did make me curious. But, you know, because these free agent signings are awesome. But how do they get their money back? But I think my question got kind of answered. It seems very apparent that they want to make inroads in the U.S. market.
I get the impression as well, based on essentially what every single fighter had to say. I think they're not pushing the brand as like the UFC. You know, the UFC pushes UFC, the three letters. I get the sense that one are going to be, at least in this country, heavily pushing the, we are the alternative to the trash talk. We are the place in the market where you can come for your traditional martial arts, because there's a lot of people crying for that. They want back that sense of tradition,
right,
and stuff like that. Whether those people end up parting with their money is a different story, but I think one is going to push the narrative of, we are the alternative.
Funny when you say when you will they depart with their money. That's so true, because like, I love MMA, dude. I love this sport. Like, I watch more MMA than is healthy for a human being. But man, if I had to push out my money for it, man, you kind of like those grudge matches, right?
You get a little more selective. you care less about the sporting integrity a lot of times when that money's on the line, because we just, no matter what, we want to see some weird shit. Mm-hmm. It's just something about human beings. We got to see some weird, some crazy shit. But I do, one phrase that came to mind, or one saying that came to mind at that press conference while Oscar was talking, I think Vitor Belfort said that mixed martial arts is a family sport. And in reality, no, it is not. It is not. But if that's the direction that you're going in, I mean, that is sort of a niche market that you might have some success. I'm not even saying that that's going to remotely come close to the level of success that the UFC has had.
But it's
something.
But it is true. But like for instance, I love going to watch my son train jiu-jitsu. So like martial arts, it is interesting, right? Like martial arts is a whole. Well, my life's weird. Yeah, his life's weird. Yeah, you're right. It's not a normal family. It's my family's.
No, I think you're right. Yeah. You take kids to go do karate and wrestling stuff. I think martial arts,
but not necessarily.
Maybe not full contact.
Here's where I kind of have a little bit more of a sympathetic stance for that mentality. And I know you were there. I was not a media member at the time, but UFC 184, Ronda Rousey fought Kat Zingano in the main event in Los Angeles. I have never seen so many young kids at a fight, specifically young girls.
Absolutely.
And, you know, at the weigh-ins, how many girls were there in their gis?
Yeah, the Ronda phenomenon was amazing.
Exactly. So if you have the right names there, there is at least some sort of way that you can rope in younger fans. You can rope in people as a family. Of course, the sport itself is very brutal, and that's going to turn off certain families right off the bat. But if you've got a family that's a not quite the Brady Bunch, maybe, just maybe, you can get their eyeballs.
All right, that's the Morgan family. All right, last thing I want to ask you guys about Eddie Alvarez, because I feel like we saw Eddie Alvarez unhinged today. Well, unhinged sounds like crazy. That's not what I meant.
Unfiltered.
Unfiltered. There you go. That's the one I was looking for. I mean, I feel like Eddie Alvarez, especially towards the tail end of that, and I'm going to play the audio. So I'm going to tease the audio because we're going to play that in just a second, so you'll get to hear it. But give me your thoughts on it, because, you know, dude, I thought he went in hard. I mean, addressing the Tony Ferguson situation, which look, I'm looking forward to this press conference tomorrow, which we're going to get to see, Holloway and Poirier. But, like, I definitely plan on asking Dana, and I don't expect to get the greatest answer in a press conference. But, I mean, I can't wait for Holloway and Poirier. Like, that fight is sick. Can't wait. But how the hell are we having an interim title fight without Tony Ferguson, or a title fight of any kind without Tony Ferguson? But I also understand Tony Ferguson's point of view. Like, I was already the interim champ, and now you want me to fight for the interim title again? Like, you're not even calling this a title defense. Like, I got to go fight for it again. And I thought Eddie Alvarez, you know, addressed that situation perfectly. And then he talked about, he's like, hey, listen, man, there's billions being made. You got to share some of this with us. And you know, just address a lot of things. So, listen, like, things are shifting. And I think when he said things are shifting, it didn't just mean things are shifting to one.
Yeah, no,
you know,
yeah, no.
I thought what he meant is things are shifting in terms of fighters realizing that, look, I have value as a fighter, as a person, as a commodity, and I need to test it on the open market. So, I don't know. I want to hear what you guys thought, because I thought, you know, it was, you know, only 6-7 minutes, but Eddie was fired up.
Eddie Alvarez is echoing some things that I think we've all kind of been saying for a little while now. One thing I've been saying for a minute now, Conor McGregor is an agent of change. Since he came around, people are talking back. They are demanding more of a cut, and this is just the continuation of that.
Yep.
Yeah, this is just continuing down that path. Like, these guys are not they're seeing, okay, this organization sold for $4.2 billion. I think the final estimation was $5 billion once the Fertitta sold their remaining stake back. So you've got billions of dollars being transacted on their backs. Somebody is going to be upset. Somebody wants a cut of it. And this is it. At some point, there's the day of reckoning. It can't continue forever.
Yeah, but
the way it has.
I think Eddie Alvarez is right. There is a shift in the mindset. I don't know if that necessarily translates to a shift in the behavior of the fighters, because, like, how many times has their union been started or nearly started? Like, they won't even sign their project spearhead cards.
But it starts somewhere.
Of course, it starts somewhere. But when I heard the figure of the sale, the $4.2 billion figure, I thought, well, surely to God, fighters are going to be furious now they got a bit more. And they sort of did, and then they pull back. You know, and it happens. And I think Eddie Alvarez is right. There's a shift in mentality, but so far what? A lot of people have reached out to Juan and him to be like, oh, they pay us more there. I don't see many people saying, I want out of the UFC because I can get more money elsewhere. You know, it's tough. It's a tough thing. So I think there's it'll happen eventually, but I think we're a way away.
We might be a way away, but it has to start somewhere. The sport is so young.
Yeah.
I mean, we're what, on the 25th year of the UFC, or 26th year of the UFC? Like, things will change at some point, but it has to start somewhere. I think when we look back on this era, we're going to see that this is an era of metamorphosis. This is not going to be the UFC that we recognize.
Yeah, well, I think this
10
is
years from now.
This is like an era of overcorrection, right? So they paid a lot of money to buy this company. They want to make that back as quickly as they possibly can, start turning a profit. So I think this era of like super fights and double champions and stuff is like just an overcorrection on that. Like, fuck, we need to get loads of money back.
We got biggest hits we can get right now.
Everything they book now is like short term thinking. Like that's why Darren Till and Israel get title shots so fast. Like, it's all short term thinking. The build stars, make money back. So I think in about 5 years it'll sort of taper off, and then like, fans will start getting bored of it. Like, you know, if you get like 10 double champions in 2 years or something, fans are going to be like, well, fuck double champions. And then it's going to start going back to create, hopefully. That's all with the caveat of like, I hope that's the case. But that's my prediction.
All right, well, listen, you know, like I said, we started this thing late. Fighters are getting on the scale in about 20 minutes at this point. So official weigh-ins are about to start. So listen, we don't normally like to end on an interview, but I do want this Eddie Alvarez audio to be heard, but Cold Coffee is going to start killing people in here in a second because he's got to edit this thing after it's done, and we don't want that to happen. So what we're going to do is say that, hey, if you want to listen to Eddie Alvarez and hear him come a little bit unhinged, but maybe drop some truth. He says, listen, man, people need to start listening. Then stay tuned for another few minutes. If not, then either way, we appreciate it, and thanks for listening.
Eddie, we can't help but ask. You're not looking at quite 155 these days. You're looking pretty big right now, man. You know what you're walking around at? And is it going to be? I mean, are you packing on muscle right now?
So it's hydrated weigh-ins, so you guys are used to seeing me kind of thinned out. But we're 5 weeks away from a fight. This is normally what I look like walking around. You guys are used to seeing me the week of the fight from where I'm cutting water and doing all that. So, no, this is my normal. It's my normal walk around. You know, I'm a meaty dude, and when I'm walking around, I can get as high as 191, something like that. But right now, in the mornings, about 78, 79.
Nice. What's the experience been like for you? I mean, I know you haven't actually competed yet, but you know, you've certainly been a part of this organization quite a bit already. So, what's the experience been like for you?
I have, and I've already went over and visited twice. I went to the Singapore live show. I went to I visited Tokyo. And that was a huge homecoming and welcoming, because I fought in Tokyo in 2006, damn. So I fought in this arena that we're about to fight in for the Grand Prix. I fought there 13 years ago, my first time I ever been to Tokyo. They handed me $11,000 cash, and I was happy as can be. So we've came a long way. I'm excited.
How are you? You know, what's the excitement level of potentially fighting Shinya Aoki again? Because you guys have a rivalry, obviously, dating back to Dream.
I have trouble talking about that because I personally don't feel like he's gonna win against Edward Fuleihung. I think it's a good style matchup for Edward, and he's already beaten him. So I don't want to speak about someone who is not going to be champion, or I don't feel is going to be champion. So if he's champion, then we can talk. But for right now, he's just a contender. And I want to keep my eye on Timothy, my next opponent, and not on, you know, contenders. I'm my eyes on the belt.
You fought for other brands before, but I wonder, when you say you fight for the UFC, like, that's the big brand. Everybody knows it. When you say you fight for Bellator, when you say you fight for one championship, you might have to explain it a little bit. Is that tough or frustrating for you, a guy with your experience level, to maybe have to explain to people where you're at?
No, because this has been my journey throughout the whole thing. I'm a guy who fought for Dream. Dream wasn't the most popular, the popular place. I fought for Bellator. Wasn't the most popular place when I started there. I was never concerned about the stage that I fought on. I just wanted to put on good fights and have whatever fans, my hardcore fans who understood fighting, that they knew I dumped my heart and soul into it, that they would follow me no matter what stage. Didn't matter what the three letters were. If I was fighting on a stage, that they would tune in and watch me. So I don't expect any different of behavior me going to one championship. A real fan of fighting will follow a fighter anywhere, and I believe that, and we've already proven it.
How many fighters have reached out to you just seeing the move you've made, especially with the timing of what's happening in the lightweight division in the UFC?
Not just me, but to one championship alone?
Yep.
Hundreds. You guys are going to... I'm not, and I don't want to sound like, oh, he joined one, and now he's about one. It's not about that. There's a serious shift going on, and no one's allowed to talk about this shift. And let's keep it quiet. And hey, what do you think I can get here, and how much do you think I can get? There's a shift. There's a serious shift going on in MMA. People are starting to understand that the money is being shared a little bit better than what it's always been, and that in order to do that, you gotta test free agency, you gotta have a little bit of carriage, and if you do that, you'll be rewarded. And guys are doing it now more than ever.
Is it a money thing, or is it the fact that the UFC are perhaps, you know, it's becoming the entertainment era, right? There's interim belts all the time, there's sort of supervisor time. Is it that's upsetting fighters, you think, or is it just the money situation?
I honestly think it's a little bit of both, right? I'm embedded in the underground and the fans, right? What do I hear about fans? Hey, I don't know anybody on this card. This card's coming up. I have no one. I have no emotional interest in this next card. I don't care who's on it. I'm not watching it. Like, that's not good. It's not good. I'm a fan of fighting. I watch the UFC. I watch Bellator. I watch everything. I hear what people are saying, you know? And when I went to Singapore, I sincerely seen something special. It felt like when I first watched Pride, and I went, holy shit, this feels right. This feels like the production feels right. The beat of the drum throughout the whole single fight, boom, boom. It's something special, and you're not going to be able to experience it unless you take the trip there live, or when they come here, you'll understand what I'm talking about.
You're wearing the Phillies hat. I got to ask, Bryce Harper.
Huge deal, huh?
Do you think it's too much, a little restrictive, if you're the Phillies?
No such thing as too much for an athlete. You're never going to hear me saying athletes getting too much money. You're not going to hear that in my mouth.
What's the biggest incentive besides, the monetary competition? Because that's a lot of travel. That's a rigorous schedule.
What's the what? I'm sorry.
The biggest incentive besides, better pay.
For me personally, everybody's gonna have their own incentives, but yeah, money. We're prize fighters. I want to make a lot of money while I do this. I've taken a lot of beatings. I've been in a number of fights, and I already feel I'm an advocate for fighters. I already feel like we're all severely underpaid. So everybody needs to get paid more, and every promoter needs to share more. People are making billions now. It's not the same. Shouldn't be win and show, and here's your 10 and 10, and it's bullshit. You know, you're making billions. You have to share. Not only that, my incentive personally is I've had the Bellator title a number of times, a couple times. I've went to the UFC. People told me, hey, you can't make it in the big show, or you can't beat these guys. Proven. It's not about being popular. It's about being a good fighter. Neither one have anything to do with each other. You could be popular, but the best fighters in the world are unknown. They're in the jungles of Brazil. They're in the foothills of Dagestan. You don't know them. I've been in gyms where I got my ass whooped by these guys. Got my fucking ass handed to me. And I said, how do you pronounce that guy's name? So they're everywhere. They're all over the world. It's not about the stage or the UFC, MFC, whatever FC. It's not about the stage. It's about the fighters. Great fighters are everywhere.
But Eddie, I heard you say the other day that you weren't a big fan of interim belts and stuff, but a lot of fighters be paid more. Do fighters not get more money when they have an interim belt? Do they not get the champions paid in income?
From my personal understanding, and this is going to be argued because nobody knows. Nobody knows, right? You say, oh, that's BS. You know what he's talking about. From what I know, every situation I've been in, it's a substitution and not pay more. If I know a guy has an ego, he's a little bit insecure, most fighters are, and I don't want to pay him, I say, hey, what do you think about a world title, buddy? and a young kid who don't know anything goes, oh my God, I could be UFC champion, or I can be Bellator champion, or I could be champion. And then they go, then their mind gets clouded. They don't even care about money anymore. They don't even think about money. You know, it's we all need to wake up. Fighters included, media, fans, everyone needs to wake up and go, bullshit. Fucking bullshit. We all know it is. Everybody peeps around and doesn't whispers bullshit. But we need to call bullshit. We need to say, just pay the guy. Just pay him money. Do something for him besides a ranking, besides a belt that you're going to strip him of in 2 months. Do something for him monetarily. Besides, you know, besides all these other things that equal no value. Thank you.
When you see Tony Ferguson turning down interim title fights, then we don't know the reason why, but he apparently wasn't interested.
Tony Ferguson, could you imagine? Could you imagine? That's the saddest story. Hey, you got an interim belt. Hey, you want another interim shot? Are you kidding me? Are you guys kidding me? No one's talking about this. Two interim shots without a real title? It's an absolute joke. It's a joke. It's gone too far, and something needs to be said. And I'm glad for Tony. What'd he do? He flipped the bird and said, not happening. I want the real belt, and he deserves it, you know? He deserves the shot, so it's good that fighters are speaking up now and saying things, you know?
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.